When injured vets return to the U.S., their first stop is the Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Today's improvements in tanks, body armor, and medical care have led to more soldiers surviving their injuries than in previous wars. My next guest, Colonel Paul Pasquina, is the medical director of the amputee program and chairman of the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at Walter Reed. As Jonathan Cunningham discussed in the first part of our show, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency has many projects underway that are making it possible for Dr. Pasquina to give his patients more advanced artificial limbs so they can lead more normal lives. This past weekend, Dr. Pasquina was given a Lifetime Achievement Award by Country United, a joint effort of the Henry M. Jackson Foundation for the Advancement of Military Medicine and the Tug McGraw Foundation. Well, Colonel Paul Pasquina, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me ask you first, do the advances in battlefield medicine mean that you have more seriously injured soldiers coming in to Walter Reed and people with more amputations?
Well, I think there have been dramatic improvements in the survival rates of injured combat service members that have been recognized in operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. Primarily, we have the most highly skilled medics that are in the field providing first aid, life-saving treatment, as well as expert field surgeons, anesthesiologists, nurses providing combat casualty care. So the survival rates of this conflict have been unmatched in history. But as a result of that, we do see a number of injured service members that are surviving wounds that would not have been survivable in prior conflicts, which has created significant challenges, obviously, for our medical professionals, but more importantly, challenges for those service members and their families for recovery.
Have you seen noticeable improvements in prosthetics just since the beginning of the Iraq War in 2003?
There's no question there has been a significant improvement in the technology that exists for care for individuals with limb loss. There had already been a significant movement in terms of development of lower limb prosthetics, in terms of materials, in terms of energy storing capabilities, and socket design to make a more comfortable and functional lower limb prosthesis. There had not been as much advancement in the upper limb, and with the challenges that we were seeing for our injured service members with upper limb loss, we felt it very important that the Department of Defense and the Department of Veterans Affairs invest a significant amount of money towards research for upper limb prosthetic development.
You know, I've read that there's something called a C-leg. That's not S-E-A. That's the capital letter C, which is, I guess, includes some battery-powered joints. Can you tell us about what that is?
Sure. There are several microprocessor knees that are on the market, produced by various prosthetic companies. And what a microprocessor knee does, it has a computer chip that controls the resistance of that knee to either flexion or extension so that it actually can adjust the resistance based on your cadence or your speed of walking so that when you're walking faster, it will provide less resistance. When you're walking slower, it will provide more resistance. So it works by the knee adjusting to the speed of an individual's ambulation.
And it can tell when you're going uphill or going downhill too, I guess.
Well, there are various components that that can help with yes, adjustment up or downhill.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies sitting in for Terry Gross. Back with Colonel Paul Pasquina, medical director of the amputee program at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center. He talked about some of the challenges researchers face in developing artificial limbs that function more like real arms and legs.
What we see is the next great movement towards improvement or technology development in lower limb prostheses is development of power. You have to realize that all lower limb prostheses that are available today, or at least the majority, are passive devices, meaning that they don't replace the muscles that are lost with an amputation, so that you have to actually support the entire leg and swing that forward or backwards. The introduction of motors into a prosthesis will actually help propel an individual either out of a chair, up a flight of steps, or, you know, forward during ambulation. So we see the future of prosthetics incorporating more motors to replace some of that muscle loss. There are two powered knee devices, one that has been on the market, one that is now coming to market, that does offer some great advantages to that, that still need to be evaluated and still need to be developed. But we see that as a potential great advancement in lower limb prostheses.
Tell us about artificial arms. What's the type of artificial arms, wrists, or hand devices that you can put on, and what sort of functionality do they provide?
So for the individuals that we see with upper limb loss, we typically start them on what's called a myoelectric prosthesis, so a motorized prosthesis that works on sensors over the muscles that will pick up on muscle activity and then cause a elbow to flex or extend or a hand to open and close.
And that's a muscle in the at the end of the residual limb?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
Our approach to that is because we believe it's very important to get an individual using a prosthesis as early as possible to help with their rehabilitation and recovery. And because we believe that bimanual activities will help preserve the intact limb over the length of an individual's life, so that if you just resort to using one hand all the time, then you'll have an increased risk of developing arthritis or overuse injuries of that remaining wrist, elbow, or shoulder. So we believe that's very important. And the reason for our choice of a myoelectric prosthesis often is because of the extent of injuries that we do see with combat injuries. There is oftentimes significant soft tissue injury or skin injury that prohibit the use of a cable-powered system that would put more pressure or more strain on that limb.
So the myoelectric prosthesis is one which has batteries and which attaches to the vestigial limb, the stump, if you will, and it has electronic sensors which detect muscle movements and convert that into digital signals and actually make the fingers move, the wrist turn?
That's correct. It makes the hand open or close on demand, elbow flex or extend, and then the wrist rotate if a wrist rotator is added. And what that allows us to do is actually train an individual with limb loss before their residual limb is even able to withstand a socket. So before a limb is even closed, you can put these electrodes on their muscle, get them to start driving prosthetic devices and exercise those muscles before their limb is even ready for fitting for a prosthesis.
And then what's the next step?
So then as they learn how to use that prosthesis, then we also introduce a more traditional body-powered prosthesis, which is controlled by movements of either the shoulder or upper limb to pull a cable system to either open or close a hand device or a terminal device or an elbow, which is the more traditional type of prosthesis. And we are very fortunate in the Department of Defense to provide both a myoelectric prosthesis as well as a body-powered prosthesis to all of our individuals, and so that they can decide which one is more functional for them. So when they're going through the rehabilitation process, oftentimes it's not clear what their long-term goals will be. So while they may prefer a body-powered or a myoelectric prosthesis now, as they move forward with their either returning to active duty military service or returning to the community, they may end up using one prosthesis more than another prosthesis, depending on what profession they go into.
So they may walk away with two in the end. Yeah,
that's correct. And we also do also provide activity-specific prosthetic components to allow them to get back to the activities of their choice. Again, whether that be weightlifting, whether that be basketball.
Can you describe one or two of these activity-specific components?
Sure. So for an upper limb amputee, there are various terminal devices that will fit whatever that activity may be. So if that activity is hunting or shooting, then a different terminal device will be used than perhaps would be used for rowing a boat or scaling a wall during rock climbing.
My understanding is that historically, GIs who have suffered amputations have generally left the military. That is changing, I gather. Is that right?
That's correct. We have seen about 20% of our injured service members with limb loss that have gone through the medical board process that have decided to and have achieved going back to active duty military service. So there has been kind of a cultural shift in terms of opening the door for our injured service members to return to active duty service. We have to be careful in our approach to that. Obviously, our goal is to help our injured service members return to their highest level of function and return to the goals that they set. But many enter military service wanting a military career, and we're very, very happy to be able to provide that opportunity for them.
Do you get to know the patients individually yourself?
I get to know many of the patients. I wish I could get to know all of them, but I do get to know quite a few, yes.
Is there an example of one who came in maybe in the depths of despair with an amputation that you can recall changing when they were fitted with a prosthesis and were able to restore some of their body functions?
Well, there's no question that we see a significant amount of tragedy in the work that we do. But I think the tragedy we see is far outweighed by the inspiration that we all feel seeing our service members and, again, their resilience and courage that they demonstrate. Watching somebody get up for the first time out of bed after they've been on prolonged bed rest for multiple injuries is always an uplifting experience, as well as watching individuals that have come through a long rehabilitation process that have now moved on with their lives and their career, have gone off, gotten married, had children, either returned to military service or returned to education, and then come back to Walter Reed or Bethesda and talk to some of our newly injured service members, because their telling of their story and the path that they've carved, I think, opens up doors for future veterans.
Well, Colonel Paul Pasquina, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Oh, thank you.
Colonel Paul Pasquina is Medical Director of the Amputee Program and Chairman of the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at Walter Reed Army Medical Center.